An organization that connects women entrepreneurs to lending opportunities is fighting for its funding. From SDPB, today is Monday, May 19th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we check in with the South Dakota Center for Enterprise Opportunities. We'll get a quick update on funding and then explore the history of access to capital for women in America. Plus, we'll ask, is now a good time to start a business? Or perhaps more specifically, what are some preferred business opportunities in South Dakota today? Then Elon Musk drew criticism for comparing Social Security to a Ponzi scheme. We'll look at how Americans are feeling about the stability of the program today. Rick Kaler is coming up later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. President Trump's recommended budget on discretionary funding would slash the Small Business Administration by 33% and eliminate all women's business centers. Well, we will report on the economic impact of this in South Dakota in the days ahead. But today, let's get to know the leaders of South Dakota's Centers for Enterprise Opportunity. Sadie Swear is director of South Dakota CEO East, and she joined us from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. On the other side of the state, Elizabeth Freer. She is director of South Dakota's CEO West. CEO, again, stands for Center for Enterprise Opportunity. Freer connected with us from SDPB's Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. We'll begin here with Sadie Swear.
So we are two sister centers working across the state. We are two economic development nonprofits that are partially funded through a grant program through the Federal Small Business Administration. And we're both proudly hosted through Black Hill State University.
Nice.
And even though we are technically two separate grants, two separate centers, we work very closely across the state. And so we share a similar mission, but we have the same functions. We both do free and confidential business advising. Let me say that again. It is free business advising. So we both do that via Zoom across the state. We do that in person, and we love doing that, as well as doing technical trainings, workshops, and programs. Our program came from the 1988 Women's Business Ownership Act that was signed at the federal level. So a couple things of note that came from that bill was, number one, our Women's Business Center program. And so now there's over 150 women's business centers across the nation. Okay. There's at least one in every single state. And here in South Dakota, we're lucky to have two. And so the other piece of note that came from that bill was that women could get a small business loan without a male cosigner.
1988.
So again, the West Side has been serving across the state for over 16 years. Our East Side Center in Sioux Falls started in 2021.
Yeah, I feel like I have to ask the hard question early on, which is your funding at risk with the new administration that's trying to find places to cut? Elizabeth, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were listed in the president's discretionary budget that was proposed on May 2nd. All of the SBA programs except for the Small Business Development Center were listed as items to cut that were duplicative. We don't think we're duplicative. We think we have economic impact. We have businesses that we helped start, 19 of them since October 1st between our two centers. We've helped connect 16 businesses to $2.4 million in capital. So that's private investments that's going straight into businesses. So for every dollar that's coming into our center, that's a tax dollar, we're spitting back out almost $14 of private capital that's invested into those businesses. So when you turn that into economic activity, it's multiplied again. So really the economic impact of the work of helping small businesses start in our state is enormous. So I don't think we're duplicative at all in terms of the work that we're doing. We certainly work with our resource partners of the other SBA organizations and other economic development partners. But yep, we're absolutely at risk, and we're putting as much information out as we can about ways that people can contact, use information we have and help contact our elected representatives to share that story.
Yeah. Sadie, one of the positive things that I've noticed is just how many people like you who are at, you know, financial risk or who have been identified or targeted by the administration have these powerful stories and have all these numbers. This isn't the first time that, you know, you've had to walk around and say, how am I spending this federal money, right? Accountability has always been a part of what you have done.
Exactly. And we are responsible for taxpayer dollars that partially fund the services. So we understand that we need to be able to reiterate the impact we're making. And we are working alongside, we have an association of women's business centers. So this is a collaborative effort. And we look at it as a chance to educate or reinform our Congress members, our communities, even the state of South Dakota, the impact that Women's Business Centers and SD CEO is making across the state.
Yeah. So let's get to this question of whether or not now is a good time to start a business or be in business. It's certainly a challenging time. Sadie, is it a good time to begin to launch a business, a small business, as a woman in South Dakota?
Well, you know, we also want to say that as a women's business center, we do work with everybody. And that has been since the inception of the grant itself. So I actually work with a ton of married couples when it comes to the technical trainings we host. We have men and women who are coming to those. So we work with everybody. We truly do. But when you ask that question of, is it a good time to open a business? You know, when it comes to South Dakota, we do a good job of supporting local. There's always a chance to do a little better. Father's Day is coming up, so make sure to shop local there. But this is also times where innovation can happen. And when we work with small business owners, we see people who really want to do the research and preparation. And it's great to see that. We want to see that, even in times like this. And I think as you're working with small business partners, groups like ours, we can help with that research, doing a business plan, looking at your market audience and research, and meet with multiple of us. You don't have to navigate the journey of starting a business or growing a small business, or as you own that small business, you can still come meet with us and ask questions. And it's not just us, but it's the trade centers, it's the small business development centers, it's the SBA. So there's so many opportunities that you can come and ask for help. So
yeah, and you've been through the pandemic.
Yes, and you know, it's really a test of a small business owner. Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen, right. And so you need to be resilient as well.
We've been through a supply chain disruption before, Elizabeth, and we've been through market disruption before. What is evergreen about this, and what are you hearing from small business owners that might be a little new to the challenge? What do you think, Elizabeth?
I mean, the resources that we have, the opportunities that we have, South Dakota is such a great state for starting a business. That is the first and foremost. There are a lot of places that kind of fluctuate more in their support of small businesses, but with 99% of the businesses in South Dakota are small businesses. So this is really the place to be. Our state is, you know, the Secretary of State, Department of Revenue, all of the state agencies are very supportive. So certainly there are challenges that exist, changes in the economy, changes in legislation. But we have great relationships with our resource partners, great relationships with GOED, SBA, figuring out creative ways to address challenges that businesses are facing, which include financing. That's often the biggest challenge. And I think you asked, Lori, what we see businesses facing as a challenge, and understanding financial projections, understanding how to put together a budget, doing that work up front to get ready to have a successful business and building that really solid foundation. You wouldn't build a house without a foundation. You shouldn't build a business without one either. Yeah. You know, you want to make sure that business is anchored and, you know, has that solid starting point.
Yeah. What if you're coming into an already existing business? Maybe you're not an entrepreneur, but you know, you're managing for somebody and you're stepping in to a new place, trying to get new skills that you're building. All of a sudden you're in charge of the website now, or all of a sudden you're in charge of an event planning, and you're like, hey, I got great ideas, but I need some advice. Sadie, where do
Absolutely.
I begin?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, with a turnkey business, and maybe you worked in it before, so you have some experience, or you're getting into it completely new, starting with that base of a business plan is a great option to start. And we are definitely here to help you out with that transition, as well as so many of those free resources. Elizabeth and I have multiple options of online videos, walking through, you talked about a website. You know, we have a resource right now that has how to step-by-step start a website. I mean, those are specific examples, but it's such a good option to start with the free resources and then maybe look at, oh, what's a skill I can learn, or what do I have time and capacity to work on? And then look at that next step of what can I outsource?
I'm getting excited when you just talk about learning.
Oh, good. Yes.
And I think that's a lot of people who are in entrepreneurial or interested in business. They're naturally excited to learn and be of service to their customers or clients.
And you have to wear so many different hats. So that's what we find when we work with people who might be an expert in providing one service, and being able to share, these are the other areas you need to be thinking about, whether it is marketing or operation, or like Elizabeth said, financing and the financial systems around a business are probably the top question that we get.
Yeah. Yep. You make a good point, Lori, that sometimes for businesses, they get started and they are excited to buy all of the equipment and all of the newest and latest and all of the best of whatever those things are to support their business. But those aren't all necessary to start a business. Sometimes starting a little bit smaller and really learning about your business as you're building it is more effective. I have businesses that have come in for advising where they really overspent early on and their cash flow didn't work because they thought they were going to make a lot more right up front, and they bought lots of equipment and they said, gosh, I wish I really had waited to buy this part of it, and I could have gotten started with a little bit less.
So that brings me to this idea of being in community, because one of the reasons I tend to rush ahead is the excitement to be part of something, and I might, you know, overpurchase or get a little ahead of my skis, as it were. But I'm wondering, and Elizabeth, we'll start with you, you know, when you're in conversation with a bunch of other people, you're getting that rush of connection, and you're sharing that excitement without making a big financial investment or hearing from other people how they did it. Tell me a little bit about the community and collaboration and just connections that you foster.
We see a really powerful network of business owners. Most of them are women who come to a lot of our networking events. I think women have found that they don't have as strong of a network. They may not know as many other people who are business owners. And so having that mentoring relationship with other business owners, that opportunity to learn together, is so powerful. I know Sadie sees that through the events that SDCEO East hosts as well. Mm-hmm. But being able to connect, it's one of the things I love about what I do, is connecting people to other people who are doing something similar that I know about, or another resource. And so that network is really powerful to figure out, like, oh, you're working in this area, you need to talk to this person who may actually be in Watertown. And I know you're, you know, in Box Elder, but we need to get you two connected because you're going to have a great conversation. And that's part of what I love about what we do, is that it's both the networking that happens at our events, but it's also where Sadie or I connect with another business or another person, and we figure out we've got to get these two businesses connected so they can learn from each other.
Yeah. What would you add to that, Sadie?
I mean, everything Elizabeth talked about was spot on. You know, a couple specific areas I see where we're intentionally making connections. We talked about some of the SBA resource partners across the state, Governor's Office of Economic Development, Manufacturing and Trade. We talked about other lending CDFIs or groups that are providing SBA loans, different banks. We like to focus on connections too with bankers, accountants, insurance agents, business attorneys. And an area I would love to grow in is getting the business owners that are actually, you know, have owned a business 10 years plus, who might be looking for mentees like Elizabeth talked about, or looking for more vulnerable, intimate connections with other business owners who have done it for 10 plus years.
Yeah.
So they might not be coming to the open networking event that everybody can come to, but is more geared towards who's that experienced business owner. So right now, that's an area we're working towards, or how can we program or service that group? But like Elizabeth said, having a space for startup business owners, growing businesses, it's so important to share, I'm not quite sure about this area. What are you doing? I'm trying to learn about how to use different programs like building a website. It's so important to be able to ask those questions.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Can I add into that for a second? Yeah. I think there are a couple of opportunities, internship for businesses. We're talking about learning. We're talking about how businesses connect. Connecting to, you know, students coming out of school, whether it's one of our technical schools or universities or high schools, there are some great opportunities for internships that I think businesses can capitalize on. And then as well as the state apprenticeship program is such an incredible opportunity for businesses that are wanting to grow their workforce or grow connections and invest in building the people who will work in the businesses going forward.
Yeah. Let's talk about financing and getting capital. What are some of the trends that you said Elizabeth, you said that's a big question. People are like, how do I get the money to move forward?
Lori, we're so glad you asked.
Yes. There's a lot of misconceptions around lending, and there are so many different ways to do it. There are different resource partners that we have. So we don't actually lend money, but we help people get prepared with their financial projections, with their budget, with their business plan that we were talking about earlier, to be able to have that confidence to go in and talk to the bank. Sometimes it takes talking to 5, 6, 7 different lenders to find the right match for the type of funding. And then a lot of people don't realize some of the flexibility or options that come through the SBA loans, where the Small Business Administration is actually providing backing. They take the second position on a loan to what a commercial lender is doing through the 7A loan program. And so that provides kind of an additional guarantee to the bank so that they're willing to look at some different circumstances around using collateral or amount of down payment. And it's different for every loan, so I can't speak to the specifics, but it's a great opportunity to have that conversation about the benefits of the SBA lending. And that, by the way, is a program that funds itself. So it's not taxpayer dollars going into loaning money to individual businesses. It's supported, the administrative costs of that program are supported through the loans. Yeah. But that can be stacked with, you know, Governor's Office of Economic Development has the SD Works funds that can be stacked for certain types of businesses where you need immediate working capital to fit out a business, but you've already put the money to purchase a business, you know, or purchase a location. USDA has revolving loan funds. A lot of our economic development partners that are regional have revolving loan funds. So there's so many different options. And it just takes having the conversation and being willing to have the tenacity and the grit to keep going, even when you hear no from one, that's just no for them. It doesn't mean no overall. You just have to keep going with it. We have great relationships with a number of banks, and so we can help talk through that with people who are wanting to go into accessing capital.
Sadie, to give myself the best chance to get that loan, to get to yes, what should I have before I even think about making the ask?
When you're going in to talk to potentially a bank, you will need a business plan and something that's vetted potentially through an SBA resource partner like the Women's Business Center, SDCEO, the Small Business Development Center, as well as a startup budget and financial projections. So we can help with all of those. And not only that, but some confidence. You need to be able to go in there and get them to believe in your dream as well, and also make sure that you have them ready to know that you're prepared to take on a little bit of this risk, but you're going to make this work, and the numbers also help you tell that story.
Yeah. One of the things about you're willing to take on a little risk that I think
I learned when I was covering a business, women in business conference through MB, I think it was a long time ago that I went to that. Somebody was asking a question about, well, I don't have anything to put forward. I just need a loan. And the person who was leading the conversation was like, well, could you, you know, put some mortgage money or, and the client was like, that's mortifying to me. She's like, why should I take a risk on you if you're not ready to take a risk on yourself? And that's how they were kind of coming into this center area of like, how do you develop the confidence? And it might not be mortgaging your house. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that you are also taking a risk on yourself when you say emotionally, you're trusting that you're betting on you.
Exactly.
If you're starting a business.
And
that's
making
hard.
Those numbers make sense.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth and I have talked about how you can work with an accountant, you can work with a bookkeeper, but as a business owner, you need to be able to tell the story and understand how those numbers work when you're especially going to talk about how to get a small business loan.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The ingredients to starting a small business are usually the same: a great idea, a supportive community, whole lot of hard work. But now we have the additives of economic uncertainty and high tariffs. So let's return to our South Dakota Centers for Economic Opportunities East and West directors by asking this question again. Is now a good time to start a small business? Sadie Sweer joined us in Sioux Falls, and Elizabeth Freer was with us from Rapid City. We begin here with Elizabeth Freer.
There's some certain opportunities. So the SBA, with new administrator Leffler, has set some clear priorities of business areas that are of a particular focus. So if we look at what the SBA's focus would be on supporting, you know, growth of small businesses that they believe will support our economy, it's rural businesses. There are four of them: rural, manufacturing, trade, and childcare. And so those are the top priorities. And you think manufacturing, you know, my business isn't really manufacturing. A brewery is considered manufacturing.
Oh.
So beverage and food products, apparel, printing, and activities around printing, or manufacturing or supplies that go into a component of a larger manufacturing process. So really, when you think about it, it's like, how does a bigger product break down into smaller products?
Sure.
Or something where I could contribute to the process. And trade, I think we see the same thing. It's like, well, how am I going to do international trade, importing or exporting? But if you have a product that's produced through woodworking, or there's a kennel company in South Dakota that's exporting the kennels.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of opportunities, but then it comes with that other state and national level support for, like, South Dakota Trade is a relatively new organization in South Dakota. Manufacturing and Technology Solutions is a state level agency, and we can connect individuals to these people who work for MTS or trade, and just have that conversation about what business support is available for them as well.
To add to that,
in these priority areas.
That's interesting to know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we absolutely have more resources regarding all of those focus areas that we've received from the federal level SBA. And when we talk about opening a business, it comes back to, what problem are you solving? We talked about preparation, doing your market research, and working on your own grit and resilience. But what solution is your business going to provide?
Yeah.
What gap are you filling? And even if you want to open another coffee shop, how are you going to be different? What kind of gap are you filling when it comes to manufacturing? What's a product or what are you providing that isn't around here right now? I mean, what are you solving?
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be problems to solve even right now. There are challenges and uncertainties, but coming back to, what are you solving? How are you going to adapt? Even if you're a current business owner, that's what you have to do.
Say more about childcare. And we certainly have covered the childcare crisis on South Dakota Focus and other SDPB news stories. It seems like, are we just waiting for people in rural areas to come up with innovative ways? Like, I see the problem and here's how I'm going to solve it. Help me sort that through, because it seems like it's a really tough business model to be successful in. So, Elizabeth, if somebody walked in to one of your events and said, I love kids and I would love to be part of this solution, but I don't know how that could ever be a successful business model. Where do I start figuring out how I might do something different that can serve my community and connect with my love of caring for the next generation?
The first thing I would do is thank them for coming in to talk to us and to recognize that it is a business. We ran a series of childcare training, full-day training, with funds from the Child Care Implementation Grant through GOED. We worked with Elevate, with KVG here, West River, and I know Sadie was involved in some programming as well. But childcare businesses have economic impact that the people who are running those businesses don't realize. So because they are taking care of 3, 4, 5 children in their home, that is 3, 4, or 5 other families that are able to have parents who are working. And so when you start to multiply the value of that, so I think we really undervalue our child care providers, and our child care providers often don't see themselves as business owners. So the first thing I said to each one of the groups that we presented in front of is, you are a business owner and you have economic impact. And then you start to unpack that of what those different layers look like and the look of shock on their face. And when leaving at the end of the day, I didn't really think of myself as a business owner. I was just going to take care of some kids. But the way you view your business, you know, are you a premier service? Are you more a basic service? What are your benefits? What's your value proposition? Same thing Sadie was just talking about a few minutes ago. And, you know, how do we get people to communicate those? But also, we have to pay for childcare. When you're expecting your child to be cared for at $2 an hour, that it isn't really realistic. So through understanding how your price, how your hourly price is built, what the different, you know, rules are for each of the different communities, we have ties into some of our other partners who are working in childcare and would love to help set up budgets, financial projections, and understand how pricing and value proposition is stated so that they can be successful businesses. I do actually believe that childcare, particularly I'm talking about in-home childcare, I think the childcare centers is easier to make a profitable model. Staffing is the bigger issue there. But for in-home childcare, you can make it a profitable business. You do not have to lose money at doing it.
Oh, that's a fascinating answer. Doors are opening in my mind.
Yeah, and we saw that same exact phenomenon, if you want to call it that, when we were able to sit down with the group we worked with, and we also worked on a business accelerator for people who wanted to start a childcare business. Mm-hmm. And sitting there and saying, you are a business owner, just they elevated themselves, and then they elevate their business and what their expectations, their boundaries. And that's what it takes, especially in an in-home childcare business.
You're not the neighbor lady. You're a business owner.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're a business owner, and you treat the parents and the children in your care as though you're a business owner. So there are policy examples we have. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, what paperwork do you have in terms of liability for the children that you're caring for? Do you have the right form? So we have an entire resource set available for people that was funded through the work we did last year. So that is a free resource that we have that we can share with individuals who are interested in opening in-home childcare centers, which is particularly what our training focused on. Yeah. But I think that's really the answer in our small communities. Our small rural communities is primarily going to be in-home childcare providers.
Yeah. Fascinating.
It's a real business.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't have to convince me twice.
Yep.
I already knew it was a business, but you've definitely convinced me with more of this knowledge that, oh, I get it now. Yeah, that's cool.
Everyone else who's listening gets to hear it. It's a real business.
It's a real business. Childcare is a real business. All right. Any final thoughts, Sadie?
Oh, you know, I have a new appreciation for our country in a place where anybody can open a business.
Yeah.
It is a true freedom. But as you contemplate, as you get excited about opening your business, please come work with groups like ours and people like us so we can help you along that journey to help prepare, do the research, get the knowledge and some of those skills that it takes to start a business and sustainably keep a business open.
Yeah. Elizabeth, final thoughts?
One of my favorite things to say to people is, we were talking before about having multiple businesses, knowing your value proposition. And I always encourage people when they're doing their market assessments to think about, and you identify all of your competition, to think about every single one of those businesses as a collaborator. So in our small communities, we are stronger when we work together. We know that as resource partners, we know that as individuals. But let's support the small businesses around us. Let's collaborate with the small businesses in our community and support them, and also encouraging small businesses to collaborate with each other.
Those were the directors of South Dakota's Centers for Economic Opportunity, East and West Women's Business Centers. Sadie Swear is in Sioux Falls and Elizabeth Freer is in Rapid City. You can learn more at their website. It's bhsu.edu/sdceo. We'll put a link up on our website as well. We will have more with these leaders in the future as we continue to examine the economic impact of small business development in South Dakota. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Rick Kaler is a wealth advisor in Rapid City, and he fields a lot of financial questions. The latest he has been hearing a lot is, Social Security even going to be here in 5 years? And adding to that insecurity, Elon Musk recently joined the Joe Rogan podcast and called the benefit system a Ponzi scheme. Rick Kaler joins the show to talk about what Social Security is, what it's not, and whether it will stick around. Kaler is the founder of the Kaler Financial Group, and he sat down with us in SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. I mean, is there a better time to be a financial therapist than when everybody has questions about financial therapy?
Yeah, there's always been a need for it, but it's exponential today in today's world.
Yeah, it's sort of like that, the best time to plant a tree is 50 years ago. The second best time is today. I feel like all the work we've done for financial therapy and how these things trigger our emotions, it's great because you've got a lot of building blocks and a foundation we've already built on. And then if you're just panicking now, the second best time to start understanding your emotions and money is today.
Yeah, the instability that's just almost locked in to the system today. Definitely if a person didn't think they had issues before around security and stability, this is giving rise to take a look at those dormant concerns or behaviors that are coming to light everywhere.
We're going to dig into a column that you wrote about Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. A lot of this is triggered by Elon Musk's comments and the Joe Rogan podcast. But I'm wondering if, in your experience, have people always been unsure about how Social Security works? Like, have you seen this in the past, or people were like, what if it vaporizes? What if it's not there?
The concern isn't new at all, because we have heard over and over again that the trust fund runs out of money in 2033, 2034, and we've been hearing that, I don't know, for quite a while. And it's pretty common that somebody will make a quip, yeah, if it's there.
Right.
It's especially a concern of younger folks, too. Will Social Security even be there when I turn 66, 67? What was new about Elon Musk's comment is that it's a Ponzi scheme, which inherently is something that's illegal, corrupt, deceptive, which it is none of that. So there's a wide misunderstanding of Social Security and exactly how it works and what its future is.
So let's unpack that. What exactly is a Ponzi scheme?
Well, the Ponzi scheme is where you take money from one person and give them a promise of some type of return. And then you use that money to produce the returns for other people. So it's just a continual house of cards where you need to have money coming in. You need new investors, so to speak, so you can take their money to give the return to the original investors. So it's just this wheel that works fine until you can't get any more money to pay the return to the previous folks. And that's when it all unravels and comes apart, because there's nothing there.
There never was. Yeah.
And it's a promise, and it's the last person in the door is the big loser.
So Bernie Madoff is the famous sort of the big kahuna of all Ponzi schemes. Most people remember that story, and people lost their entire life savings.
Exactly. Yeah. And he produced really consistent 10% returns. Everybody was wondering, what is this guy's secret sauce? Mm-hmm. And if you were early in the game with him, you were quite happy. But it all fell apart when he couldn't attract any more people. And if you have a little lull, then you start missing payments to people, and the whole thing begins to unravel.
Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme.
It is not a Ponzi scheme.
The seed of comparison comes from this idea that young people are paying into something that older people and retirees are benefiting from, but these are totally different things. What are some of the basics of how Social Security works?
What a lot of folks don't understand is that Social Security is a tax. It's really not being paid into anything. There's really not a fund there with your name on it. So to your point, that's why it's looked at as a Ponzi scheme, because it's money in and money out. So it does take younger workers to be paying the tax to fund the folks who are older. Now, that in itself isn't exactly true. What I just said.
Right.
Because Social Security could be funded without any tax. And that's because the U.S. government can create money. And this is why I say Social Security will be there in any form for somebody. It really doesn't even need the payroll tax. And I know there's a lot of listeners right now whose heads are exploding. Like, what? Yeah. But a debt of the U.S. government that's in dollars can always be paid. The money is always there. Now, the downside to that is inflation. You just can't print money at will and everything be okay, because inflation is the issue. So the federal government has the ability to meet every Social Security demand that there is today and in the future. Well, let me say this. In the past, we've collected more tax than we paid out. So that was the difference that they put into this lockbox. Remember Al Gore and the lockbox? I guess that dates me.
No, I'm with you.
And that's gone into this fund that grew until today, the amount going out in benefits does not equal what's coming in taxes. So that's why that fund that accumulated for many years is now going down. And when it hits zero, which is in 2033 or so, the amount coming in can fund about 80% of the obligations. It's not going broke, even if nothing is done. The benefits will be reduced. And this is the easiest thing to fix. I think I said in that article that if you put 100 certified financial planners in a room, lock them in a room for 2 days, bipartisan group, they will have Social Security fixed. It is easy to fix.
Because you extend.
When you get it, you go from 67 to 70. Mm-hmm. You raise payroll taxes. You take off the cap on payroll taxes.
Yeah.
And or a combination of all of the above.
Yeah. A series of compromises with those bipartisan financial planners would come up with a reasonable solution to this.
It's easy to fix.
Yeah. Okay. So we get back to, you know, someone like Elon Musk, high profile, says, hey, this is a Ponzi scheme. He either doesn't understand policy, or if he has his own agenda of, you know, why he's saying that is probably less relevant to us. But it brings up this idea of, can I trust the government?
can I trust my future? What, I've done all this work. I've worked my whole life. And now this social contract is going to vaporize, and people feel stuck. What's happening to us emotionally when all these thoughts start spilling into our brain because we saw essentially a tweet or an interview or a headline that sent us spinning?
Of course, there's a real lack of trust in government today. Mm-hmm. And so when we have somebody like that say that this is a Ponzi scheme, there's nothing there. And the last person in is going to be left holding the bag. And Social Security is going to play an important part of your retirement, which it does for the large majority of Americans. It's intuitive that there's fear there. There's a fear of the money running out. There's fear of survival. What do I have to do to try and survive? I mean, we're going right down to the core of us that must survive. We're into the brain stem of reptilian survival.
Yeah.
And that is a fear that goes pretty deep.
I think it's important to add here before we go further that Social Security is not just for retirees.
It's for disabled folks.
Yeah.
For widows.
Yeah.
Widowers.
So we're down into that brainstem. We're down into our basic fear for security and fear of scarcity. If this is a social contract and this is our commitment to our elders, as you say in your piece, it is a tax-supported promise to care for one another across generations, is how you phrase it. How do we begin to behave when we feel like we're not going to get ours?
We can get pretty base in our actions. One of the first steps, and we've talked about this before, is to acknowledge the fear. Yeah. Really acknowledge the feeling rather than acting out on it. Rather than maybe, well, I better sell out everything in my portfolio because I'm going to need money from somewhere and probably the market's going to disappear. I mean, we start making up stories and we start taking actions based on that fear. Researchers and psychologists tell us the most important thing when feeling a really difficult emotion is to acknowledge it. Just even to say, I am scared, can be difficult because we tend to react and act on feelings rather than separate them from the thought or the action. And I see that in myself. Just acknowledging I'm scared can help start to reduce the actual chemicals that flood our brain when we get flooded.
Mm-hmm.
And research also tells us we need 20 minutes for those chemicals to subside to get back into our logical thinking brain. And that's important that we get back to some type of equilibrium so that we can take in some facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've gone through those facts, why anybody listening to us right now does not need to be worried as to whether Social Security is going to be there.
Yeah.
It is a third rail, and it's going to be there in some form or fashion to where a person can then relax, let go of the anxiety and the fear, and then say, okay, worst case scenario, 80% of it will be there. How can I plan today for that potentially happening in 2033?
Yeah.
I've got 8 years. I don't think that will happen, but that would be the logical thing to prepare for. And for example, in the financial planning that I would do for somebody, especially somebody under 50. Mm-hmm. Is you just plan, when you retire, we'll plan on 80% of your Social Security being there.
Yeah.
And now you can be proactive and figure your way around it.
Yeah. And sometimes I want to just be clear about what you said. There were two different pathways. First was the physical, like you might need to take some deep breaths. You might need to give yourself 20 minutes. You might need to ground yourself. All the different things to handle the physical reaction. And then the second thing was more of a cognitive and a thinking strategy, a top down. To say.
And in that order.
In that order. So first was this sort of belly out, I guess, because I feel most of my anxiety in my stomach. So I'm going to call it belly out. Because if I get curious about where I'm nervous and do a body scan, it's almost always like, well, it's my stomach is feeling upset. And then once you get that 20 minutes, if you're to that point, then you can start the top down thinking about, well, what is the reality here? And then the third stage is, what can I do to respond to the situation that I am in?
Exactly.
And that's empowering. That's empowering, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once we can ground and get to that point of equilibrium, then it's, okay, where can I go to get another thought on this? Or where can I go to get another opinion, or where? And today we've got AI, right? You can get into perplexity.ai and put in questions like this. Tell me about Social Security. How does it work? When will it roll out? What are the chances that I'll have nothing? And you can get some amazing data almost immediately.
And then confirm that with someone to make sure that
make sure it's not hallucinating. Yeah, that's for sure.
AI does make mistakes. We're not at the confidence level with AI that perhaps we will be 6 months from now, even, but definitely, in 2030, perhaps we'll be having a different conversation. But yes, verifying those facts. But to your point, we have access to data in a way that nobody before us has had access to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, even if we only have a library card.
And, with AI, I'm kind of a proponent of AI.
Yeah.
And there's new AI apps coming on the market that are real time and that will do the research where you can ask it, show me your sources.
Yeah.
And you can click on those and actually read it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, that's a verifiable resource.
Well, and here's two things I'm going to converge then. AI and politics, because also as we come up with, like, maybe I'll be living on 80% less of my Social Security. How do I plan for that? I can also start behaving from a policy standpoint of, what I'm asking based on how I feel about that, what I'm asking the people I'm voting for to do. So I can also take that path. AI, you're doing the same thing. People are clearly telling AI, we want to see the sources. We don't want something that's just telling us what to do. We want to make sure that we can confirm it. We are teaching it how we want it to be. We get to create AI, which is not a perfect system, nor is politics, but but we get to vote for people, we get to talk to people, we get to create the world that we want to live in to a certain extent. There's lots we don't have control over too, but
absolutely.
See what I'm saying there?
And it's just so important, especially today, it's so important to check sources.
Yeah.
It's so important for each of us to fact check anything,
right?
Whether it's on Facebook, whether it's a Sunday show, we need to run that through a fact checker, and there's a number of fact checkers out there, so that we're getting good information upon which to make our decisions.
Yeah,
and we've talked about the importance of that in the past, and that goes down to the news diet that we consume. Yeah. If it's all one side or the other, that's a financial threat to us.
That's financial therapist Rick Kaler. You can find his blog and more financial wisdom at his financial group's website. That's kalerfinancial.com. And you can find years of financial therapy conversations on our website, sdpb.org. Just search for Rick Kaler. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you from all of us at SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.